This is All In. I'm Matt Pelser. Today we're talking to local organizations focused on civic engagement, each one working to encourage different demographic groups to head to the polls on Tuesday. If you have questions or comments on our show today, you can let us know on Facebook or Twitter at All In Indiana, or leave us a voicemail at 866-476-3881. Just give your name, where you're calling from, and a quick question or comment, and we'll do our best to get it into the conversation today. Again, that's 866-476-3881. You can also send us high-quality voice messages with our smartphone app called All In Vox Pop. It's free and easy to use. Just search for All In Vox Pop on your phone's app store. Later in the show, we'll hear from leaders of four different local organizations. But first, we'll hear from Elizabeth Bennion, a campus director for the American Democracy Project at IU South Bend and the director of voter services and education for the League of Women Voters of the South Bend area. Elizabeth Bennion, welcome.
Thanks. Glad to be here.
So what specific work does the American Democracy Project do on IU South Bend's campus?
We try to get students registered, educated, and mobilized to vote in every election, whether it's local, statewide, or national. And this is something we do every year, but it's taken a twist in what that looks like this year during the pandemic. And of course, we never tell students how to vote, but we do want all of them to have the experience and the knowledge they need to be able to successfully cast their ballots.
So when there isn't a pandemic going on, what does that kind of outreach look like?
One of the things that we do is go into classrooms. My colleague David Nickerson and I did a study, which is a large-scale randomized experiment with dozens of campuses and hundreds of thousands of students. And what we found is that classroom presentations can be very effective in generating new registrations and new voters. And so we do a lot of face-to-face outreach to students where we find them. And so that's something that we've tried to adapt this year with a Zoom conferencing with courses that are being taught virtually.
So you're kind of doing the same thing. You're just kind of Zoom crashing some of the courses that are happening virtually.
That's right. We are part of an Ask Every Student program that is run through the Student Learn, Student Vote Coalition nationally. And they are encouraging campuses nationwide really to think about how to ask every student to register and to vote. And that means doing the things that you can do. So meeting in classrooms virtually, it means if students are picking up their IDs, having information there. When students go to the bookstore, they're not going to be milling around and we're not allowed to talk to them face to face, but we can put information with their grab and go book items. We even did our party to the polls where we had free t-shirts and free masks for everybody. And we're able to do socially distanced photos and all go on vote early day, October 24th and cast our ballots downtown. And so we're adapting in order to do our registration, education and mobilization work.
You're still doing the work. Can you point to anything that you might say has been the most difficult part of adapting that outreach?
Well, we weren't allowed because of campus traffic flow patterns to have the banners and the tables that we normally have to be highly visible. And there are also many fewer students on campus. And often you can catch people that way by as they move from class to class, actually encountering them and encouraging them to vote and check their registration status. And so some of those accidental meetings are no longer available to us. But we have tried to adapt to the new situation. So on Constitution Day, for example, in September, on September 17th, what we did was a grab-and-go station where people could get a goodie bag full of neat treats. And we gave away hundreds of these, but then they'd also have information about how to vote and important resources they can use and how to contact us for more information.
Why is it important to reach out to the younger demographic of voters?
One of the things that's really critical is that voting is a habit, and we know this from political science research. The best predictor of whether somebody will vote in the future is whether they have voted in the past. And so we want to create that civic identity, that identity that they will have as voters. People who have this sense of identity have the knowledge, skills, and experience needed to cast those votes, but they also develop a sense of themselves as voters. And that's something that we can help them do so that they will vote even if the races on their ballot aren't the most exciting to them or not everything is competitive, because you see it as part of what you do and who you are. And so that's really something that we try to instill at IU South Bend, at Indiana University more generally, is this identity as responsible civic actors, including being part of the electoral process.
Do you think enough work is being done to reach younger voters?
Well, it's really amazing all of the groups that have come together nationally to support campuses like ours across the country, and particularly here in Indiana. So the Campus Election Engagement Project partnered with Indiana Campus Compact to have a fellowship program where we have a student who has a scholarship to help get other students engaged. We see some of the traditional outreach approaches like Rock the Vote being supplemented by new approaches like MBA stars with More Than a Vote, who work to target young African Americans and other young people by actually embedding voting videos in their 2K TV program that's inside their game, right? So if you're playing NBA 2K21, you can actually now get voter information. So they're meeting people where they are, which is also what we're trying to do on campuses in Indiana and across the country. Find the students where they are and make sure they're getting the information they need. We also have civic engagement champions, and that's something that was encouraged by the National Council on Citizenship and the Student Learn, Student Vote Coalition, which is, you know, find all of those students where they are, get civic campus champions among your faculty who agree to post announcements to their Canvas pages or our course management sites, who will agree to have students come in and talk to students about why voting is important. And again, it's all strictly nonpartisan, but there are lots of groups doing this work and helping individual campuses to adapt this work for their particular student body, which is incredibly important. The reality is that this group, if they would turn out, would be able to affect elections in a major way. This group is now a very, very large group of voters. And the problem is that they don't vote at rates that are similar to older voters. In 2016, for example, nearly three times as many older people ages 60 plus voted compared to 18 to 29 year olds. And that makes a difference because it makes a difference in terms of what policy looks like, but also what politicians talk about. Are they talking about Social Security and Medicaid? Those are important issues, but are they really tackling student loan debt and some of the issues that matter most to students and to other young people?
What are the voting barriers that young voters face?
There are many reasons why young voters vote at lower rates than older voters. One of them is they're less likely to be directly connected to a political party, and they have a less well-established voting history. And this means that some candidates, campaigns, and political parties will overlook them. We know that young voters, like older voters, are most likely to be mobilized if they're actually asked. Seems obvious. But for many years, campaigns simply ignored young voters. They weren't sure how they would vote, so they didn't bother to mobilize them. And because they're not in those established networks, they're less likely to be asked. They also can be more mobile if they're establishing their own homes. If they're going to college, they may be moving addresses frequently. And because of the way Indiana's election laws are, you need to re-register 29 days in advance. Often by the time your peers are really talking about the election and you're getting excited about it, then it's too late to register. And they can have problems figuring out which ID they need if they've moved or they're out of state, but they want to vote in state. Do they need to update their driver's license? Does it need to match? Now I could use my student ID at a state institution like Indiana University, but if I registered by mail, then I need to bring a secondary piece of ID. Do I have a utility bill if I live in a dorm, right? Or on campus housing? And so there are additional hurdles for young people. They're also not as established in ways that we know affect voter turnout, like being married, seeing government through the paying of taxes, through having children in schools, et cetera. There are a number of demographic characteristics related to higher turnout levels that tend to be things that younger people will develop later in life.
You can, I'm sure, one of the strategies is you could get them excited by the issues. What are the issues that young voters care about right now?
There was just a National Student Issues Convention that brought together 300 college and university students from 11 states, and Indiana University South Bend was one of the participating institutions. And the students were asked to rank issues and then to discuss and convince each other and then re-rank them. And they came up with climate change and environmental justice as number one, education reform, including quality education and student loan debt, affordable health care, police brutality and criminal justice reform, racism and racial equality, and then COVID-19 relief and pandemic planning for the future as top issues. And we know nationally, young people really tend to care about issues of the environment. They also tend to be passionate about guns, gun ownership, gun safety, but also gun control. Those are some of the issues that young people are talking about. We see differences between young Republicans and young Democrats, but we also see some similarities where they share concerns about certain issues, such as climate change and racial justice.
All right. We have less than a minute to go. In fact, I'll give you about 30 seconds. Why do you think some voters right now might be, some young voters might be more motivated to vote in this election specifically compared to previous ones?
Well, I think it is really a high-profile election, and they realize that there are huge differences between the candidates. And although not all young people are excited about either candidate, I think what groups are trying to do is to convince them that if they're noticing big differences, they should decide what's important to them and actually get out the vote. So there is a lot of coverage of this election, and we know that young people care about the issues. We need them to actually connect that to a vote and to make their voices heard. And it's a chicken and an egg thing. They're not going to have power until they exercise that power. Once they do, their numbers are huge. They have the potential to really make a difference. They just need to hear that message.
Elizabeth Bennion's campus director for the American Democracy Project at IU South Bend. Elizabeth, thank you.
Very welcome.
And we'll be back with new guests after a quick break. We're talking about local organizations combating voter suppression. We're back in 90 seconds. This is All In. I'm Matt Pelser. We're talking today about voter suppression and what local organizations are doing to educate and encourage people to vote this election. We would love your questions and comments on the topic. Find us on Facebook and Twitter at All In Indiana, or leave us a voicemail with your first name and where you're calling from at 866-476-3881. You can also get us a voice message, through our free smartphone app. It's All In Vox Pop. Just search for All In Vox Pop on your phone's app store. Send us your question or comment, and we will try to get it onto the show today. We have four guests in this and the next segment. Melissa Borja is a volunteer organizer for the National Asian Pacific Women's American Women's Forum in Indiana and an assistant professor at the University of Michigan. Melissa Borja, welcome.
Thank you for having me.
Barbara Bowling Williams is the president of the NAACP Indiana State Conference. Barbara, welcome to you. And Elise Schrock is the president of the Indiana Democratic Latino Caucus. Elise, good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
Amy Shackelford is the program director for the Immigrant Welcome Center. Amy, good to have you.
Thank you for having me.
Melissa, we'll start with you. Can you tell us about the National Asian Pacific American Women's Forum?
Yes. So the National Asian Pacific American Women's Forum, the chapter here in Indiana, began just this year, about 7 months ago. And we are a progressive organization that is seeking to build a movement centered on Asian American women. So we have been involved in mobilizing Asian American women here in Indiana, making sure they know how to vote, making sure that we're also fighting voter suppression and building a movement so that we can flex our political power after Election Day.
What have you been doing to engage the Asian American voter population?
For the past couple months, we have been phone banking. Over 100 volunteers have helped us call Asian American women across Indiana. We've made 2,300 phone calls as of last night. We've managed to get 263 Asian American women headed to the polls in language outreach in Mandarin, Cantonese, Punjabi, and Korean, and also dozens more people as a result of our outreach have decided to get involved with our group. So we're feeling a lot of momentum at this moment.
And Barbara Bowling Williams, I'll ask you a similar question. What work has the NAACP Indiana State Conference been doing to engage the African American community to come out and vote?
Oh, certainly. We that's been our mission for the 110 years that we have been involved. Right now, we are working with all of our partners around the state in reaching out to voters, being on radio shows, not going directly to civic organizations anymore, except on Zoom. Of course, that has changed a lot of the way that we do our outreach. But because we have 20 branches around the state, they are doing work in their respective communities, and also along with our youth and college chapters and our youth councils.
I'm sure there have been a lot of ways the pandemic has affected how you would typically engage the demographic you're trying to reach. What are some other examples?
Some other examples include having webinars. We've had town halls, virtuals. We were participated and co-sponsored a candidate forum between the gubernatorial candidates, and certainly outreaching to all of the Black sororities and fraternities, the Divine Nine, what they're called, certainly working collaboratively with other African-American groups and, phone banking. So things of that nature.
Melissa Borja, I'll come back to you. I mean, does the picture look similar in your world with the demographics you're trying to reach?
We are seeing that Asian American women voters are very excited to participate in this election, and also feeling more confident than ever before that our voices will be heard. It is very exciting that we have a major Asian American figure on one of the presidential tickets. So that's exciting. But I think also people are very concerned about the everyday issues that they're facing in this moment and are seeking to hold elected officials accountable.
All right, Elise Schrock, I want to bring you in. I imagine the Indiana Democratic Latino Caucus is in a similar boat when it comes to trying to engage your community when there's a pandemic going on. But can you talk about the ways the organization continues to educate the community now?
Sure. Well, many of the things that we're doing really echo some of Barbara and Melissa's efforts. It's just making sure that these resources are accessible to our respective communities. So we, too, are providing educational webinars that are bilingual in both English and Espanol. We are, we've created toolkits that are bilingual. We make sure all of our folks are aware of resources that they have from the National Bilingual Voter Protection Hotline. And we also have been engaging in phone banking Hispanic voters across the state to make sure that we are reaching out to let them know that the election is around the corner. We need them to come out to vote because so much is at stake.
What kind of challenges do you run into, Elise, when it comes to phone banking? I mean, a lot of people don't answer the phone. But when you're talking about a population, and we've talked a lot on this show about there's a trust issue among some immigrant communities where if they get a phone number, a phone call from someone who they don't know, they're not going to answer. They're not going to follow up. They might not believe that what you're they might not believe who you say you are, I guess. Have you run into that?
Sure. Well, and first I have to say, you know, not all the Latinx voters that we reach out to have, you know, recently immigrated here. We have generations of folks who have been here in our state that we're also reaching through this phone bank, but most of them have all in some way seen or experienced the trauma at the hands of especially this administration. So yes, there is a trust issue, but by reaching out with the correct cultural competency, we're able to build that trust. And I think that's important, not just for our respective organizations, but for any political party or any group trying to increase democratic involvement, because that cultural competency is so important to meet people where they're at.
And we've talked about cultural competency on this show as well. And for people in the communities that you're trying to reach, if you're within the demographic, does that cultural competency come at a challenge, or is it much easier to relate to the demographic you're trying to reach if you yourself are a part of it?
I think that it is. It's going to be easier to have that conversation. I've had this conversation, and I think Melissa Borja on a previous discussion we've had, she talks about how when she's phone banking, she feels like she's talking to a lot of her aunties. And I'm similar, you know, when I'm talking to people in our community, it feels very familial. And there is a connection there, and there's a warmth there that really helps build that trust. And I think that comes from reaching out to people within your own community. But again, you know, it's important that all systems make space for us to do this work within their organizations.
We're talking today about voter suppression and what local organizations are doing to educate and encourage people to vote in this election, which, just as a reminder, is this upcoming Tuesday. And we have with us Elise Schrock, who you just heard, president of the Indiana Democratic Latino Caucus, Melissa Borja, volunteer organizer for the National Asian Pacific American Women's Forum in Indiana, and an assistant professor at the University of Michigan. Amy Shackelford is also with us, program director for the Immigrant Welcome Center. And I'll come to Barbara Bowling Williams, who's also with us, president of the NAACP Indiana State Conference. So we just heard Elise talking about cultural competency and also talking about one of our other guests, Melissa Borja, speaking with her about using cultural competency to reach out to the demographics they're trying to engage for this year's election. And Barbara, do you feel like you have to do some of the same things? They might not look the same from demographic to demographic, but what does cultural competency look like when you're reaching out to the folks you're trying to engage?
What it looks like, especially when we're doing sending messages over Facebook or text messages, we will utilize something that would get the attention of African-American voters, so that they might, you know, at that point pause to listen to the message or look at what we're trying to say. So, you know, it's very important that that we get an opportunity to actually engage that voter. So, you know, to a certain extent, we do utilize cultural competency materials.
It's about knowing who you're trying to reach by being who you're trying to reach as well, I would imagine. Amy, I'm going to come to you. Can you talk about the work that the Immigrant Welcome Center has been doing to educate immigrants and refugees in Indiana?
Sure, absolutely. Thank you. So the Immigrant Welcome Center is a nonprofit organization based in Indianapolis, and we work to connect immigrants and folks with refugee backgrounds to the resources and services that they need. And so civic engagement has been a priority of ours for the past 2 years. We are a member of a national organization called the National Partnership for New Americans, and they've identified Indianapolis as a critical place because we have about 15,000 immigrants who are eligible to naturalize and become citizens. And so we've been working to not only help people access free legal help to apply to become citizens, but also we offer citizenship classes to help people prepare for that test. And then we reach out to them to make sure they are registered to vote, they understand the voting process, and are confident to, you know, go cast their ballot. We've also been working to do voter outreach to immigrant populations. We've had 5 voter registration events, and we work to make sure that everything from the signage that we have is translated into multiple languages, and that we have representatives from those different communities and populations with us to talk to people so that people feel safe asking questions and understanding the voting process. We had one of our events at one of the local international grocery stores so that we can try to really meet people where they're at and make them feel comfortable in asking questions and navigating the voting process.
I'm sure that there are a number of challenges, obstacles in the way when it comes to serving the community that you serve, especially if we bring it closer to voting. What specific things create some of those challenges?
Absolutely. I echo what my other panelists said about, you know, the current culture and narrative around immigration that makes a lot of people feel very fearful, particularly to go to certain voting locations that are government affiliated locations, and just not being certain if it's safe or not for them to go there. You know, also understanding the ID requirements and how complicated that can be. A lot of people have, you know, different types of identification and they're not always certain what they can use at the polls. And then also language access is a huge challenge. To become a citizen in the U.S. does not necessarily mean that you're comfortable, you know, filling out forms and doing things in English. And so a lot of folks aren't necessarily confident to go and don't understand that they do have the right to have someone there translating for them. And so we see language access as another barrier in the immigrant community with voting.
I want to make sure that I get to this question from Benjamin on Twitter. And Melissa Borja, I think I'll direct this to you, although anyone can jump in if they want to have if they have something to add. Benjamin asks, anecdotally, it seems like the most common reason I hear about why people don't vote is they believe their vote won't make a difference. Aside from that, what reasons do your guests hear for why individuals aren't engaged? So there are a couple questions here, or a couple, I guess, points that we could turn into questions. Melissa, why do people not think that their vote's going to make a difference in your experience?
Well, first of all, I think for Asian Americans in particular, there is an assumption that they won't make a difference. And oftentimes parties and campaigns don't reach out to Asian American voters because they don't think as a population they will make a difference because they're historically small. But I do want to point to some evidence that Asian Americans are the fastest growing ethnic racial voting bloc in the United States. That includes here in Indiana, and we're strategically located. So if we think about the most competitive congressional race in the U.S. today, in Indiana, Hamilton County, home to lots of Asian Americans. So what I often say when people are organizing at the grassroots level, Asian Americans are the margin of victory. In these close races, every vote matters, and that includes every Asian American vote matters. And so I do think that more Asian American people are realizing that their vote counts and that they need to be involved. And we have been very gratified by hearing how committed the people we've talked to are to showing up at the polls.
I want to broaden the perspective here a little bit. Barbara Bowling Williams, let's address Benjamin's question as to why certain individuals aren't engaged. From in your experience, what have you heard as reasoning why people won't go?
One of the things is that people don't realize that they can vote. As you know, African-Americans are overly represented in the criminal justice system. And consequently, people, if they have had a brush with the law, may have a felony on their record, believe that they cannot vote. And that's one of the biggest messages that we have to share each and every year, that it doesn't matter if you have a felony on your record, that you can vote. In fact, once you are released from incarceration, your rights to vote, you know, are automatically reinstated. Certainly, you can't vote while you are incarcerated, but the minute you walk out of those doors, then you are now re-enfranchised, and all you need to do is just kind of go back and register again. So that, you know, that has been the hardest message that we have to give out, get out each and every year. People just don't believe. We've actually gone into jails and had people vote, because if you are in jail awaiting your trial, and that's the only reason you're in there, because you couldn't afford to pay the bail or maybe bail wasn't established, you still have a right to vote. But if you are behind bars serving a sentence, then no, you can't vote until you get out again. So that is the most difficult message that trying to convey to people and their family and friends.
Elise Schrock, in about 30 seconds, do the reasons for lack of engagement look different in the communities that you serve?
No, these are very similar. And I'll also add that COVID-19 has added an incredibly difficult layer where the Hispanic community is disproportionately affected by COVID-19. And yet our governor and the Secretary of State have blocked us from no excuse absentee voting. So that makes it really difficult to get folks out when we are so disproportionately affected by this pandemic.
We will be back after a quick break. We are talking to leaders of local organizations about voter suppression and efforts to educate and encourage people to vote this election. If you have questions or comments for our guests today, find us on Facebook or Twitter at All In Indiana and send us a message that way. Or you can leave us a voicemail. We'd love to hear your voice in the conversation. You can do that by calling 866-476-3881, 866-476-3881. Another way to get a voice message to us is with our All In Vox Pop app. You can send us a high quality voice message with it. You can just search for All In Vox Pop on your phone's app store. All In VOXPOP. I'm Matt Pelser. We're back in 90 seconds. This is All In. This is All In. I'm Matt Pelser. Back now to our discussion on voter suppression and the issues different demographic groups are focused on this election. As always, we would love your questions and comments. You can find us on Facebook and Twitter at All In Indiana, or leave us a short voicemail with your first name and where you're calling from at 866-476-3881. We have four guests with us this afternoon, and we will talk with Barbara Bowling Williams right now, the president of the NAACP Indiana State Conference. So, Barbara, voter suppression affects voter demographics differently. Can you talk about what voter suppression looks like for the African-American community, especially in Indiana?
Certainly. Voter suppression takes on many forms, and it could be as simple as the voter ID bill that passed back in about 2004, which was the first voter ID bill in the country, where it seems like a reasonable thing and an easy thing is to somebody can just get a driver's license, get a state ID, and they can vote. But it's not that simple, because you just can't go down there and get it. You have to produce several documents that you may not have. And when you look at older voters, African-American voters, many of them, especially our older voters, maybe were born in the South where they didn't go to the hospital because they weren't allowed and a midwife delivered them. So they don't have a birth certificate. So now a birth certificate is one of those documents that you must have. So now they have to go through some extraordinary means. I had to do this for a client. They had to actually get in contact with the the National Census Bureau, to have them look at the census records to see if that person, when they were a child, were included in that count, that particular year closest to their birth. So it's not as easy as it seems. Also, we want to start talk about targeting African Americans. A couple years ago, there was a bill introduced in our state legislature that would consolidate voting places in Lake County. Lake County has the second largest African-American population, second only to Marion County. And the law passed. Now, roll the clock forward now to this year, we have fewer voting polling places because of that law that only affected, mind you, Lake County. And now we aren't able to, social distancing the way we were. And the only reason for targeting Lake County was because of the large African-American population. We've had other situations where not necessarily so much as voter suppression, but certainly challenging to make voting more difficult. We had filed a lawsuit earlier, just a few months ago, to ask that because of the increased number of early voting requests, voting by mail ballots, that they be allowed to make sure that they, as long as they had that ballot postmarked on Election Day, that they could have an additional 10 days in which to receive the ballot and get it counted. But no, the way we were successful at the trial court level, but it was appealed by our Secretary of State and Attorney General, and the law got overturned, or our victory got overturned on the Seventh Circuit. So now your absentee ballot must be returned by noon on Election Day. Must be returned by noon. It can't get there at 12:05. And if you mailed it in and the post office doesn't deliver it until 12:05, it will not be counted.
Melissa Borja is a volunteer organizer for the National Asian Pacific American Women's Forum in Indiana and an assistant professor at the University of Michigan. So, Melissa, does voter suppression look different to Asian Americans in Indiana?
This is such an important issue, and I'm glad you brought it up. First, I want to emphasize that our group is a progressive group, and we see addressing voter suppression as a project we're undertaking in solidarity with other communities that historically have been subjected to these tactics. So all of the things that have already been brought up that are affecting Black voters and Latinx voters, they're also affecting Asian American voters. But there are a couple issues that are of particular importance to us: language access. We are doing a lot of in-language outreach because other institutions are not doing that supportive work for our community. And simply reaching out to people. Research shows that Asian American voters are less likely to be supported and contacted by organizations that are mobilizing voters. And so that itself is a way of suppressing the Asian American vote.
Elise Schrock is also with us. She's president of the Indiana Democratic Latino Caucus. And Elise, let's talk about the challenges of voter suppression in the Latinx community. What do they face during election season that might look different from what Barbara and Melissa illustrated?
Sure. Well, you know, I think Amy mentioned earlier how sometimes going to voting locations that are now largely government buildings can be intimidating, especially when you have a mixed status family. Mixed status meaning in one family you could have a naturalized citizen, you could have someone who is waiting on documentation, you could have someone with a military visa, so all in one family. So that is a challenge. Language is a challenge. I don't think many people know that you can fill out, and I apologize for the barking in the background, work from home
I deal
life.
With it all the time.
You know, it is not shared widely that there's an affidavit that folks who need English assistance can fill out if they need someone over the age of 18 to come help them fill out their ballot. That affidavit must be filled out before they enter the voting area. But that can be filled out so that folks can get that language assistance they need. I just don't think that that is widely known. I think the shrinking of locations and the shrinking of hours for people to vote is intentional. That suppresses our vote. And those are laws that are made here in the state at the state house. Those folks are on the ballot. I think it's important for people to know that. We will continue to organize to make sure that those people are held accountable for these types of decisions.
Amy Shackelford is with us. She's program director for the Immigrant Welcome Center. And so, Amy, I keep hearing over and over again, language access as this barrier to outreach and also voting. And what kind, from your perspective, what kind of an impact does language access have?
Oh, it has a huge impact. And, you know, that's something that we've seen really highlighted with the COVID-19 pandemic, is that when, you know, the government and different institutions are not required to translate information, then so many communities are not getting accurate information to them in their preferred language. And so when it comes to voting, we've been receiving calls from folks all over the state asking for help in how to get translation services when they go to the polls. And so it is a major barrier and something that we think is really overlooked in Indiana that we need to start talking about as a community. And I also just wanted to highlight that I think one last barrier that we see that COVID-19 has also highlighted is that a lot of immigrants and folks with refugee backgrounds are essential workers. And so having limited voting places and voting hours and long lines at the polls also really limits a lot of people's ability to leave work and go cast their ballot.
We have a question from Ellen on Twitter, and Ellen says, really appreciate hearing these voices from different communities. Wondering if the guests can speak to any Indiana-specific voting hurdles, such as lack of no-excuse absentee ballots, relatively short poll station open hours, and what citizens can do to address these problems. Thanks, Ellen, for the question. We'll go to Melissa Borja to start with to answer this question. What can you speak to on the on no excuse absentee ballots, I guess?
Well, I think it's disappointing that we don't have that option here in Indiana. But I think that it's difficult to make claims about what is specific to Indiana because a lot of these practices are taking place across the country. I think about this issue more broadly, which is part of the problem is that the issues that shape the voter turnout of Asian Americans are related to Asian Americans' representation in government. And so I agree with all of these things we need to do that address this in a broad scale. But I think one long-term issue that is a problem here in Indiana is that we don't have enough institutional representation of Asian Americans in government. We don't have Asian American voices guiding our elected officials to make sure that they are attentive to the needs of Asian Americans, including in their ability to exercise their right to vote.
Barbara Bowling Williams, I mean, the pandemic has definitely shone a light on no excuse mail-in voting and things like that. And as a movement, it is getting some heat under it. Do you think for Indiana, where we're concerned, is it just going to take time? Or in your experience, does it look like Indiana will ever become a mail-in voting state?
Indiana will become a mail-in, no excuse mail-in voting state when we have representatives in our state house who care about the citizens. We did it for the primary election. It went fine. Nobody highlighted that there was a problem with it. So that gave us an opportunity to see how that would work. And it worked well. But when we asked for it to be carried forward to the general election, you know, they said no. Also, we have one of the shortest voting hours in the country. The 12 hours, the 6 to 6, it's one of the shortest hours in the country. So we need to expand ours. And the very best thing I think we need to do is have same-day voting. Why not? You know, you have to produce so much information anyway. As long as you can produce it, then have same-day voting, or at least same-day voting registration. You can at least have same-day voting registration during the early voting periods. So there are a lot that can be done to expand access to the polls and to voting that our legislature as a whole, certainly not all of them, but the ones who are more sensitive to expanding voting options are in the minority as far as in their thinking with respect to the Indiana State General Legislature.
We have a listener voicemail here from Catherine, who has a comment on her voting experience. Let's listen.
Hi, my name is Catherine. I'm calling from Indianapolis, and I voted yesterday at St. Luke's United Methodist Church. It took me over 5 hours. I stood in line for over 5 hours. I had a young woman in front of me who had to make a conference call, so she ran off to do that while I saved her place. I had another gentleman who needed to go to the restroom, so I saved his place. I stood in front of another woman and her two daughters, and we all at one point took a selfie and decided that none of us at one point in time would have been allowed to vote because I was a woman, there was a black gentleman, and a woman with her two girls. I found it unbelievably difficult to stand there for 5 hours, and I feel as if that was a huge amount of voter suppression. Thank you for your program. I certainly enjoy it. Oh, and by the way, I did call the governor's office and report the issue. Thank you very much.
Good on you, Catherine, for doing that. Elise Schrock, I'll come to you. What could possible solutions be to address the problem that Catherine had waiting so long to vote early?
Sure. Well, I think going back to the no excuse absentee, we had over 500,000 Hoosiers choose to go this route for the primary, which was a record. We know that folks felt comfortable with that method and they needed it to feel safe. On the same day that the governor said that that would not be allowed and that it would be safe to vote, it was early August. Fast forward a couple months later, I think we have smashed through the 3,000 mark of daily cases today. It's record breaking. Mm-hmm. We're in a completely different, state of things. But how could that have not been anticipated? If we would have been able to have those mail-in absentee votes taken care of, that would have likely decreased our lines. The state legislature has been meddling largely in Lake County and in Marion County for years when it comes to election law. The law that they passed where it has to be a unanimous decision from the election board. It can't just be a majority of the county election boards that make these local decisions. Means that one person, if you've got two Democrats and a Republican like you do in Marion County, they can hold up if you get more sites in your county or not. These are intentional laws that have been passed. And when, I like to take a look at these types of laws, and we know we feel the effects of them in our respective communities, which begs the question, who are these laws for? What does it preserve? And that's a problem for me. And that's why, again, we'll continue to organize to change that. But in real time, I truly, my heart goes out to everyone who is spending hours and hours in line. It's simultaneously inspiring and infuriating. We hope that voters will come out and stick it out. But after this election day, I hope that you all remember this and continue to organize and vote and call on your elected officials to make sure that this is the last time that you have to experience this.
Melissa Borja, I want to go back to the issues that we kind of broke down on voter suppression and inaccessibility. There are a lot of similarities in the ways that the different demographic groups represented today, and I'm sure others that aren't, have to deal with voter suppression. What does that tell us?
Well, it tells us that we need to get our voters out to the polls even more. Because if our communities, the communities that are disparately impacted by these policies, can show up to vote and advance policies that might make it easier for us to participate in the democratic country that we are part of, then we can make change. It begins with voting. And so I also want to emphasize, this is why it's so important that NAPOF is doing the work that we're doing. We're reaching our voters and we're trying to set them up for success within the constraints that we have. And so urging early voters to show up, giving them support, that really matters. But we do hope that after Election Day, like Elise said, we can continue to play the long game and work for policies that are better for all Americans.
I feel like we've had a great discussion today, and I want to thank all of our guests for taking the time. Melissa Borja, who we just heard, is a volunteer organizer for the National Asian Pacific American Women's Forum in Indiana. She's also an assistant professor at the University of Michigan. Melissa Borja, thank you so much.
Thank you.
And Barbara Bowling Williams is the president of the NAACP Indiana State Conference. Barbara Bowling Williams, thank you.
Thank you very much.
Elise Schrock is the president of the Indiana Democratic Latino Caucus. Elise, thank you.
Thank you. It's been a pleasure.
And Amy Shackelford, we appreciate your time. You're the program director for the Immigrant Welcome Center. Thank you.
Thank you.
Our producers are Drew Dodlin and Micah Yason. Scott Cameron's our managing editor. Adam Gross is our engineer and composed our theme. Our podcast is wherever you get podcasts. Tomorrow is the Friday Pitch-In. We'll catch up on the biggest Indiana news of the week. I'm Matt Pelser. Thanks for listening today. This is All In.